Okay, let's start that again for the recording now. What are we here to talk about? We're here to talk about Kerberos in the context of SharePoint and our BI tools. Okay? That's a very important distinction here. This is not a Kerberos deep dive. Okay? We are not going to go into the theory behind Kerberos. We are not going to dig into all the little nuances of Kerberos. We are going to talk very specifically about what you need to do to get Kerberos or to get SharePoint working with our BI tools and how to use Kerberos to do that. Okay? So we're going to talk about the mechanics of getting that working. But if you have very specific Kerberos questions, I promise you, refer you to the people on the floor of the Technical Learning Center. We have some great people down there, both at the Active Directory area and in the clustering high availability realm, that know Kerberos protocol stuff inside and out. Okay? That is not my focus. That is not the focus of this session. Okay? When I'm doing speaker coaching, I call what I just said the invitation to leave speech. Okay? To make sure that you know what you're getting into sitting in this session. Okay? I don't want to mislead anyone. I don't want anyone being upset and saying, that darn Chuck, I wasted an hour and 15 minutes in his session listening for something that he never got to when it was something I was never going to get to. So, with that, who am I? My name is Chuck Heinzelman. I am a senior program manager with Microsoft on the BPD customer experience team. Ooh, that's a bunch of letters. What does that really mean? What do I do for a living? I work with the community and I work with customers. About 75% of my time is dealt with building and enriching technical communities around the world. Two of my coworkers on that team are in the room right now. I have to call them out. We have Laura Dark and Bronwyn McNutt. They both work on community as well. For me, the other 25% of my time is spent working with customers through a team called SQL Cat. Who in the room has heard of SQL Cat? All right, we got a few hands. SQL Cat is the organization that goes out and deals with some of the largest, most complicated SQL Server installations in the world and helps them to perform better and meet their goals. And we, in turn, bring that knowledge back in to make the product better, and we publish out to the community to make the community better through things like SQLCat.com. Ton of white papers, ton of technical articles, blogs, great stuff out there. I got that on the slide. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I don't tweet a whole lot. It's SQL Boy Wonder. And if you come up and ask me sometime, I might tell you the story. Okay. The whole purpose behind this is this session was originally developed by someone on our CSS team for SharePoint, actually, based on calls that they were getting about how to configure SharePoint and get things working with Active Directory and Kerberos and authentication all the way back to the database tier. Because SharePoint has enough moving parts on its own. Add the SQL Server BI stack in there? That's just, you know, throwing gasoline on a burning bonfire. You got a lot more moving parts that you now need to figure out what to do with. And so this is in response to that. They came up with a concise way to deal with most of the situations that we run into. Okay? So, Kerberos in 7 easy steps. Who really believes this? Believe it or not, it's not bad. Okay? Solve 95% of your Kerberos problems. We can do it. Very easily. Now, this is 95% of the Kerberos problems related to BI in SharePoint, okay? It's not all of SharePoint, it's BI in SharePoint, okay? There you go. Any questions? Actually, I do have a Visio flowchart that I'm in the process of getting cleared through the guys who created it, because they're the CSS guys that originally designed this presentation. I am in the process of getting it cleared for public consumption, that if I do get that cleared, I will post to the Tech Ed site with the slides for this. It's a really good flowchart, and it does walk you through a ton of different scenarios with the BI stack in SharePoint. And they believe, you know, it covers about 90% of the scenarios you might run into. So if you walk through the flowchart, you should be in all right shape. Okay. We're going to start a little bit here with just some terminology. Kerberos. People shudder when they hear this word, don't they? And it's like, ooh, Kerberos. You know, it's not that bad. What is it? Really, what is Kerberos? It's an authentication protocol. It's a protocol. It was developed by MIT. Everyone, we all use it, but it's just a protocol. Nothing more, nothing less that we implement. So delegation. What does it mean to delegate? Well, if I delegate something to you, I'm asking you to act on my behalf. Think about just real life. If I delegate something to you, I'm asking you to act on my behalf. Am I not? It's that simple. That's what we do in Kerberos. When I delegate something to someone, I ask them to act on my behalf and giving them my authority to do it. I might tell my wife, I delegate you, I won't use the word delegate, I delegate you to make the choice on what we have for dinner because I really don't care. That's delegation. My wife calls it a cop-out. But we won't go down that road. And thankfully, she isn't here to hear me say that. Yes, it is recorded. Thank you for reminding me of that. I'll keep my mouth shut in the future. Impersonation. In most circumstances in life, it's not good to impersonate someone. You can get in a lot of trouble. Okay, you know, I'm pretending to be you. It's in general in life not a good thing, but in the IT world, it's not a bad thing. A lot of our websites that exist today wouldn't work well without impersonation, would they? You know, you have a website that's running under a given user account, but you want the user coming in to be able to have their creds used against the database. Well, you can give that account and the website the right to impersonate you as a user. Now, it's not saying you have the rights to act as me. It's saying I'm going to look like you while I'm doing this from here. That's the difference. Delegation is you can act on my behalf. Impersonation is I'm going to act on my own behalf, but I'm going to look like someone else. Okay? Now, these last two I'm going to work through together. Authentication versus authorization. There's a big difference here. Okay? Authentication is validating who I am, who I say I am, and authorization is finding out if I have the permission to do what I do. How many of you have been on the Microsoft campus? A handful. Then you will recognize what I am holding up in my hand right now. This is my Microsoft employee badge. This on the Microsoft campus is authentication. I have this. The security people at Microsoft know that I am who I say I am because of this badge. Same thing going through security at an airport. You show your driver's license, your passport, some sort of government-issued ID to authenticate who you are. Authorization is different. When I walk around campus with this badge, it's not good enough just to have it. When I walk up to a door that's locked and has a scanner, I have to hit the badge against the scanner. That goes and figures out if I have the rights to go through that door. That's authorization. Okay. First, who are you? then do I have the rights to go where I want to go and do what I want to do? Same thing with the airport. Your government issue ID authenticates you. Your boarding pass to get on the plane authorizes you to go down that concourse. Okay? Any questions on this stuff before we move on? I know this is a 300-level presentation. I just wanted to get this out of the way because it's going to be the basis for what we build on. One other thing, my presentation style, I like it when, if you have a question, ask it when it comes up. Okay? And since there's these two bright spotlights shining into my eyes, it's very hard to see the audience. And for the sake of the recording, if you could come up to the microphones that we have and ask the question, that way everyone can hear it, we get it on the recording, and I don't miss your hand when you raise it. Okay? Because I can see the microphones, but it's hard to see different parts of the crowd. Okay? I might defer your question, but I would like to talk about it when it comes up as opposed to as an afterthought later on. Okay? Where did I put my clicker? There it is. Okay, why do we want to use Kerberos? Ah, the dreaded double hop issue. Does everyone understand what the double hop issue is? Is there anyone who doesn't really understand what the double hop issue is? Okay, I got a couple hands, so I'm going to go through it real quick. Okay? It has to do with delegation and impersonation. I'm going to come down off stage to do this. When I impersonate, I can impersonate to one place, okay? So I'm running on machine A as user one. I'm a website. User two logs into the website. If I'm authorized to impersonate, I can connect to the database as the user that came in off the website. That's a single hop, okay? If, however, I have a web server that goes to an app server that goes to a database, okay? Impersonation gets me from the web server to the app server. From there on out, I can't impersonate anymore. I can impersonate the first step, but I can't go any further with that user ID. Okay, that's the double hop issue, and that's where delegation comes in. If I, as the web server, delegate my authority to the app server can then impersonate back to the database if it wants to, or can delegate even further on down the line. That's how we get around this double hop issue. It's a very important security piece, but that's how we get around it. What kind of service applications leverage Kerberos? Everything we run in SharePoint. Performance Point, Excel services, reporting services, analysis services, Power Pivot, which is analysis services in essence. They all are going to leverage Kerberos to talk to each other, as well as your app pools that run in SharePoint. All of these different moving pieces need to talk to each other. And a lot of times you're crossing machine boundaries, especially if you're in a high-performance, scaled-out farm. You might have one service running on this machine, a different service running on this machine, and they need to talk to each other, and they need to delegate around and pass your creds so that you can use integrated authentication all the way back to the database. It's very critical that we get this configured and get it configured properly. Now, one of the things I like to say is, I say this when I talk about configuring reporting services for SharePoint as well, it's not that Kerberos is all that hard. The issue is it's easy to get it wrong. Fair enough? It's very easy to get Kerberos wrong, and then you got to figure out what you did wrong to recover from it. So it's... if you walk through it from front to back, it's not all that bad. And that's what we're trying to get through here today. Yes, question. The question is, I pointed out the difference in SQL Server 2012, and will I highlight that? Yes, I will. Okay. There's, with what we're going to be doing and the demo we're going to go through, there's one very specific difference that I will highlight. Okay. Okay, now we have a decision to make as a group. We are a community here. We have a decision to make. I can go one of two ways with this presentation. I could walk through a bunch of slides and do a little bit of demo at the end, or I could go into a demo of this working, or of getting this working, and then talk through the slides toward the end of the presentation. Who'd prefer the demo? Almost unanimous, except for my two coworkers. I actually had a lot more slides in this presentation than I normally have. I like to have maybe three or four slides and then the rest demo, because my learning style is I prefer to be actually working in an environment where things are happening. Okay, we'll do the demo. But to do the demo, I need to give you a little bit of backstory on where we are and the environment that we have running here. Okay? The situation is I am a report administrator at my company. We're going down the reporting services road here, but it's very similar with analysis services and the other SQL Server products. I'm the report administrator, and we've convinced our company that we are going to go to reporting services in SharePoint integrated mode. And our business requirements are that we need to go all the way to the back end with the user credentials that are authenticated to SharePoint. Okay? All reports need to run in the context of that user. No questions asked, no ifs, ands, or buts. Okay? So you give those requirements to your IT department and say, build me a SharePoint environment that's going to support this. So what they do is they build out a machine. It's a single SharePoint server running your app tier and your web front end. Separate database server. Okay? So not an entirely uncommon starting point. You start there, you start to run things, you see where your bottlenecks are, and you scale out appropriately. Not completely a common scenario, right? So that's where we are today. It's 11 a.m. We just got the notification from IT that we have been given this new environment. Here you are. You have a site collection created for you. Reporting services is configured, integrated. All of the report content types are there. Everything is set up and ready to go. We've even created a document library with a shared connection to the back-end data source that you can use. Okay? It's yours, ready to go. Now, earlier that day, you had given your boss a printed report for his afternoon meeting, or her afternoon meeting, whatever it happens to be. You think, wow, for that meeting at noon, wouldn't it be great if I could get that report deployed to SharePoint and my boss could show the executives not only the report that they need to show them, but the fact that we're using this new environment that they authorized for us to have. Okay? So the meeting's at noon. It's 11 o'clock. You've got plenty of time to build the report. It's not a problem. Okay? That's where we are today. What was that? It's suicidal? Maybe. It's ambitious. It's an environment that you have never touched. You have never seen. Okay? Have I mentioned you are a report administrator? You are not a SharePoint administrator. You are not a security expert. But for some reason, they've given you domain admin rights. That's the one fortunate thing in this scenario. They've given you domain admin rights. Okay? So with that, I like that. Definitely suicidal. I like that. So here we are in a client connected up to our new site. So I see here they gave me my report library. And yep, there's my data source. So the first thing I want to do is I want to create a new report. I just want to test the site. Before I commit to my boss or anything, I want to test the site. So I can choose a new report builder report, which I've already done in the background here. So I'm going to just create a blank report and have the title be Hello Tech Ed. And I'm going to save that. Brings up the dialog box. You know, I think I talked too long. I let the machine go back to sleep. So I see down here, and it's really nice. It took me right to the site. Because I launched Report Builder from the site. It took me right back to it. Okay, I like this. I'm going to put this in that reports folder. Hello, Tech Ed. And now we come back in here and refresh. And refresh. Did I not save? Oh, it's still saving. That's why. So now I saved this report into the document library. So now I'm going to come back here and I'm going to refresh it. And there's my report. Let me run that report to see if it runs. Reporting services comes up. Hey, there's the report. We got it. Our environment works. Okay, now I call my boss. Say, boss, we got the environment. It looks like it's working. I'm going to deploy that report, and everything's going to be great. You're going to be able to pull it up in that meeting for the execs. You know, we're all going to get raises and bonuses and extra vacation. It's going to be awesome. How many people think this is going to work? Okay, so I come back into Report Builder, and I don't understand this thing at the bottom. Why? I don't understand. So I'm just going to disconnect. I'm not comfortable being connected. I don't like that. So I'm going to create a new report now. Okay, and it's going to be another blank report, and I'm going to do a data source here that, okay, let's see. Embed the connection in my report. I'll build this so it's a BI dash. What's my server? BI dash DB1. I had to think of my server name there for a second. So, oh, I got my list of databases. Things are working. This is great. So I'm going to go to TestDB and, okay, now a slight aside here. Is there anyone in this room that can see a test connection button without clicking on it? I can't. I even if I know everything is perfect, I have to click the button. Yeah, there we go. It worked. Okay. Oh, there's another one. I have to click it there too. Okay. So I've got my data source. Now I need a new data set. Okay. I know I'm getting into the report stuff here, but embed the data set in my report. Use that data source. Oh, I just happen to have the query right here. Copy that. Refresh the fields. Okay, I got the field list. Great, perfect. Everything's working. It's a very simple report, so I'm just going to do a table wizard. Select that data set. Grab these things. Drag them into values. And next through this all. And now I'm going to run my report in preview mode. Hey, there we go. The org chart of my immediate org. This is what is so important to show, okay? Great, perfect. Oh, but you know what? I've got that data source that they gave me in SharePoint. I'm just going to switch over and use that. You know, everything is looking good here. I'm going to switch over and use the shared connection, and it was SQL creds. For some reason, I don't click the test connection button this time. Aha. And I'm going to save it out to that same library, so it's for boss. All right, so that's saved. I'm going to minimize this window, refresh here. Perfect. 5 minutes. We got the report out in plenty of time. Call my boss, say, hey, the report's there. Looks great. I'm going to go grab lunch. I'll be back about 12:30. So I walk down the hall. And I start conversing with my coworkers about lunch. My cell phone rings. It's the boss. Yeah, that report you stood up for me, it doesn't work. What do you mean it doesn't work? It doesn't work. Don't you love that? You get the call, it doesn't work. Oh, okay, what are you seeing? I'm just getting an error. It doesn't work. Okay, so I go back to my desk. You know, I was about to call and make reservations at a really nice restaurant because I was going to celebrate. You know, I go back to my desk. I run the report, and oh, boss is right. It doesn't work. And yeah, that's a real descriptive error message there too. So, what do I do? All right, I'm a domain admin. Remember, I can go anywhere I want. I go back to my database server where I just happen to have SQL Server Profiler running. And I see that I have a login failure. From, yeah, that looks like the right IP address, and it's the right host name. NT Authority Anonymous Login. That's not good. Anyone know what's happening? We don't have Kerberos config. So I make all these calls. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I'm just a report guy. So I make a couple phone calls to my security people. Oh, yeah, that happens all the time. They forget to enable Kerberos authentication for the site when they stand up. It happens all the time. They tell you how to do it. Okay, great. I can do this. So I go into central administration, find my web application, base web app, go to authentication providers, and I stare at the screen for about 2 minutes because I don't know what to do. Okay? And finally I realize, oh, default is a link. Ah, now I get it. So I come down here, and lo and behold, we're set to NTLM. Okay, they were right. They gave me the best advice here. Go to negotiate. Oh. Manual configuration. Ah, the IT guys must have done this. They're good. They know what they're doing. Ah, okay, yeah, I'm sure they did that. This is just something that's easy to miss. So I save that off, call the boss and say, hey, try it now. No, it still doesn't work. Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to go through all of the steps. That was step one in the list of 7 steps, is enable Kerberos. Okay. Most fundamental step of all. Now, we are not going to test this after every step. That'd be a waste of our time. Because I can tell you, until we get to the last step, it is not going to work. Okay? So, the next thing we do is, okay, there's this manual configuration that we need to do. What is that manual configuration? SPNs. What is an SPN? A service principal name. Why is that confusing? It doesn't serve very well. It does not get tied directly to a service. An SPN gets set on a user account. Little counterintuitive. Okay. SPNs have multiple parts, and what I will do is I will bring up an SPN definition here, and we will go back onto my domain controller. Okay, here's my SPN definition, and it's already started running. It has HTTP WAC machine name, then a username, okay? So HTTP, in this case, is my service, okay? What this is saying is this user account and this service on this machine. So it just so happens that my SharePoint app pool is running under the server's SP base web app user. So this SPN is basically an endpoint for the HTTP protocol on BIWFE as a machine. Now, one thing you will want to do here is not only register the machine name, but register the fully qualified name as well. And I will tell you why as soon as I finish typing. Have any of you been in SharePoint environments where for the most part everything is working great, but you occasionally get these phantom errors that have to do with authentication? There's a good chance you might have an SPN misconfigured. I've seen situations where, you know, you just configure either the fully qualified name or the non-qualified name, and almost everything works great, but every once in a while there's an intermittent issue where you get an authentication-related problem. Chances are there's some code path or some path through your application that is going as the opposite SPN that you have. So either it's going as the fully qualified when you don't have that one registered, or the other way around. Yes?
Set SPN for whatever port you set it to.
Okay. The question was about ports and other URLs and that type of thing. Basically, you want to have an SPN created for every, in the case of the HTTP, the web access, have an SPN created for every single thing you have in your alternate access mapping list. Okay? Also, don't forget to check for CNAMEs. Okay? Don't forget to check DNS for things that might be redirected. Make sure you have those SPNs. Any SPN or any address that the user might be coming into that server on, have an SPN for it, both fully qualified and non-qualified. The other thing is, and I've seen this, I've done it before I learned about it, do not register an HTTPS SPN. This is going to cover you there, because it's the hypertext transfer protocol as a bundle. Okay? If, however, you have an application that's working on a non-standard port, 81, 88, 8080, whatever you set it as, you want to register that port as part of the SPN. Okay? So in this case, if I was doing port 81, my SPN registration would look like that, both fully qualified and non-qualified. Does that answer your question? Okay. So that's the HTTP SPN. So that's all of our app servers or all of our app pools, the accounts they're running under. That deals with that. Okay. The next thing I'm going to do is SQL Server. Yes. Yes. A DNSA record. Pardon me. Yes. Okay. DNSA record. So I'm going to do my SQL Server real quick. And SQL Server, similar to HTTP, has a well-defined service name, MS SQL SVC. There is no validation on SPNs. You can put whatever you want before that slash. Might not work for your purposes, but you can put whatever you want before that slash. Okay? There are some cases where you need to register what's called, what I call, a dummy SPN. Why would you need a dummy SPN? Well, I'll show you in a minute. Let me get SQL Server as a fully qualified here. And notice with SQL Server, I'm even though it's on the default port of 1433, I'm explicitly defining the port there. It's not a bad thing to do. So this is the second step, is register your SPNs. Okay. Next, we need to actually delegate. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to come into Active Directory Users and Computers, find my SharePoint application account. Let's verify, yes, it is. Oh, no, that's not the right one. It's the base web app, pardon me. Good thing I checked. My application account, the SP base web app, I'm going to delegate. We are going to use constrained delegation. Constrained delegation is more secure because you define who you can delegate to. Non-constrained delegation, you can delegate to anyone that can be delegated to. Constrained delegation allows you to specify a list of services that you can delegate to. Much more secure. But once you go to constrained delegation, you have to stay constrained through that authentication chain. You can't go constrained and then jump back out. Okay? I'm going to allow any authentication protocol just in case something falls back to back to NTLM. And I'm going to come in here and add, search for users and computers, and it's SP_RS is my account. Can't find it. Huh. I know it's a valid account. Why isn't it showing up in this list? Does anyone know? Yes. That account does not have an SPN on it. Hence the dummy SPN. This service, the reporting services service that I'm running, does not have a well-known SPN assigned to it like HTTP or MS SQL SVC. But to delegate to it, it needs to have an SPN. So if I come back out here, I cancel out of all this. I am going to create an SPN. I actually have it in my script here. Paste. I just used RSSVC/RS. At this point, since it is truly a dummy SPN, it really doesn't matter. Okay? It could be anything. I just need something in there so that I can enable delegation to that account. So now if I come back in, go to my base web app, delegation, I can add users or computers, check names. Now it finds it. This dialog is smart enough to only display accounts that can be delegated to. Okay? Now here is something that's a little pitfall. First time I ever did this, I came to here and I clicked OK. And I came back here and said, what the heck happened? It's a little confusing. In this dialog, I'll go back and select this again. You actually have to select the options from the list. There's a good reason for that. This account might be running multiple services. We are in constrained delegation. You are dictating which service it can go to by selecting it here. So if I had 10 of them listed, I could say, I just want to go to reporting, or I just want to go to SQL Server. And it works through that SPN chain. Okay? Great. Yes. Okay. The situation is you cannot even read the delegation to see if they did it right. Can you run set SPN to at least list the SPNs? My best advice to you is to try it out. I don't have a better answer for you right now. And this is one of the situations, though, since this is more of a Kerberos-related general question, I'm going to refer you to the guys on the TLC floor, specifically the Active Directory. There's one stand that says Active Directory. It's in the Windows Server area. I'm going to refer you to them, because if there is any way to do it, they either would know or would know how to contact the person that does know. Okay? All right. So now we need to also delegate back to our SQL Server from reporting services. So I'm going to come in to make sure this is the right account. Yes, it is. Delegate, trust, AnyAuth, okay. BI DB1 engine. Looks good. And this is something that's confusing as well. I know that there's two SPNs on this. One for the fully qualified domain name, one for the non-qualified domain name. If you click expanded, they're both there. They compress this for screen real estate. Okay, so here's what I've done so far. I've enabled Kerberos. I've set up the SPNs that are necessary, and trust me, yes, those are all, in this scenario, those are all the SPNs that are necessary. I've configured delegation from the web app to reporting services back to SQL Server. This still isn't going to work. And this is a big mistake point. There's one more piece that's ultra critical here. And it's what this lady in the front was asking about before. Who knows about claims authentication? Who's using claims right now? Who in the room is running SharePoint? Then you're all using claims, whether you know it or not. You might not be using claims for your web application specifically, but SharePoint internally is using claims. That's why there is something called the Claims to Windows Token Service. SQL Server doesn't know anything about claims. SQL Server, you gotta go either NTLM or Kerberos. The Claims to Windows Token Service is how we can get out of the claims world and back into the world where we can talk to SQL Server. By default, that runs as a local system account. That service needs to be able to delegate as well. So you got options here. You can either turn that into running as a domain user and delegate from that, or you can do what I'm going to do and delegate from the machine account that the Claims to Windows Token Service is running on. So I'm going to delegate from this machine back to SQL Server. Now, I have done all of the configuration necessary to get this to work. So if I go into my web application and refresh and try and hit that report, is it going to work right now? The answer is maybe. The answer is actually probably not. What I need to do is I need to restart my web applications, and I might even need to reboot my box. There's a certain period of Kerberos cache that if you don't wait for that period to time out, it's not going to refresh this information. But if I restart this box right now, which I will do, my web front end, you're going to need to restart the boxes that this affects. So I have it all running on the same box. So yeah, the safe way to do it is to restart the boxes that it affects. You can wait for the, I don't know exactly what the timeout on that cache is, but I was on the phone with a coworker the other night, and we were on the phone for like 15 minutes at the beginning. He had just done something with Kerberos, and by the end of the call, it was working again. If you can do it, this is a clean way to do it. It's going to refresh everything when it comes back up. Yeah, the box is where, like, I configured all the delegation for the services running on that box. You know, I'm delegating to SQL Server, so I don't have to worry about the SQL Server box, but, you know, in this case, it's my app tier. Now, the one bad thing for demo purposes is that now I have to re-engen my site and everything, and it's going to be, you know, we'll when this comes back up, we'll start connecting to the site again. So I'm going to come back and refresh this page. I'm actually going to go back to my root site. And we'll let this churn for a while and go back and finish up the presentation. And then we'll come back in and see the report actually running. So, the 7 steps. Step 1, enable Kerberos. First thing we did. If it's not running, you need to enable the claims to Windows token service. But then again, if it's not running, you're probably having other problems in your SharePoint farm. We created the HTTP SPN for the account that is running the app pool that our portal is running out of. I created a dummy SPN for, in this case, reporting services. Okay, so I'm dealing specifically with reporting services. This it's less than 7 steps because some of these can be consolidated. These next two, the dummy SPN and the MSOAP SVC.3, those could really be consolidated into one. Create SPNs for all your SQL Server service accounts. Yes? Yeah, the question is summarized in a complex farm. You're going to have to create a lot of SPNs. You're going to have a lot of service accounts, and you probably don't have my magical access that I had. So, how do we get to a point where I can easily transition that over? Well, number one, it's going to take a lot of communication. You know, as we're seeing more and more with not just this technology, but a lot of the technology in SQL Server, there's more things that are taking more coordination across multiple teams. I don't have a silver bullet for what is the best way. What I would do personally is I would maintain, say, an Excel spreadsheet or something like that, or even a SharePoint list that has elements like the user account, the service name, the machine that it's running on, or machines that it's running on, and maybe even the set SPN statement, and you know, have that as a living document that everyone has access to and you discuss in regular meetings. That, for me, that would be the best way to do it, just to make sure that everyone's communicating and everyone's on the same page. That's what's going to be critical, is communication. So however you choose to do that communication, that's the critical piece. I want to go back. There's one thing I forgot to mention with the set SPN command. And that was, if you notice, I was using -S to create my SPNs. How many people are still using -A? Good. Start using -S. My recommendation to you. The reason being, -A will just arbitrarily add an SPN. It's not going to check to see if it exists, it's just going to add it. Duplicate SPNs cause problems. If you do a -S, it's going to first check to see if that SPN exists for that account. And if it, or just not, it's going to check to see if that SPN exists, pardon me. And if it doesn't, it's going to create it. If it does, it's going to throw you an error. Okay. This is another well-known SPN for SQL Server for the analysis services. Then we configure constrained delegation. And for claims to Windows token service, since it was still running as a local machine account, we configured constrained delegation for the machine. Those are the seven steps that we just followed. This, again, was very specific to the SQL Server product suite. Excel services, other service applications will have their own SPNs that need to be set and will have their own places they need to delegate. That's beyond the scope of this talk. But know that they do exist and there are considerations that you need to take into account there. So let's talk a little real world. Wouldn't it just be wonderful if everything all lived on one machine and we could infinitely scale and you wouldn't have to worry about any of this stuff? Even my environment here, where I had the one SharePoint machine and a single database machine, that's not going to last very long as you start using SharePoint more. You're going to run into things like multiple front ends, load balanced URLs, application servers, and different things with SQL Server. And we're just going to run through that real quick here. With the multiple web front ends and the load balanced URLs, again, we talked about this before. You want to have an SPN for every URL. And the CNAME entries, it really should be the DNSA records. This came from, again, a different deck. I'm not making excuses here, but I am. You want to make sure that if you have a load balancer in the mix, that you have an SPN set for that load balancer, because that's going to be coming into play as well. And don't forget your alternate access mappings. Very important stuff. When you're dealing with multiple application servers and multiple application accounts, basically, make sure, I like to run my services as their own account, so you're going to need to have it, again, as was asked before, it's going to get messy, you're going to have a lot of SPNs going around here. Don't forget to set up the dummy SPNs, and on each app tier server, you need to have the claims to Windows token service running, and it will need to be able to delegate to where it needs to go, which will vary depending on the services you have running on that server. When it comes to SQL Server's backend services, if you have a clustered SQL Server, don't bother setting the SPNs on the individual node names. Set it on the virtual network name for SQL Server, because that is how you access it. If I have node A, node B, and my SQL Server installation listens on SQL 1, you want SQL 1 to have that SPN, or to be the SPN, pardon me, because that moves with the cluster. When I fail from node A to node B, that VNN moves over to node B. So it's still going to be routed properly. If you are using the non-default instance of analysis services, there's a special SPN that you need to set for the SQL browser service. And that's the msolapdisco.3. That's how it can come in and discover which analysis services you're using, then connect to analysis services. And that needs to be running, again, in the context of the account that is running SQL Server browser. Let me switch back over to this other machine here. Oh, sorry, it's two. It's number two. There we go. So I'm back into my report site. And you know what? This time I'm going to be a little safe. I'm going to come into my SQL creds, and I'm going to test my connection here. Because, again, there's a test connection button. I just can't resist it. I need to click something. And hopefully it'll launch. Hey, there it is. All right. So I test my connection. Successful. All right. Let's try and run this report now. There we are. We were able to authenticate all the way back to the back end with my creds. So if I were to log in as a user that didn't have the rights to get at this data, I would not be able to run this report. So we have that authentication happening all the way to the back end. Well, you can, how to tell what user you are. If you come into that, in SQL Server, you can use Profiler to audit your logins. If SQL Server is your end target, Profile can audit the logins, so you can see the users coming through there. With other mechanisms, you might be able to use tools like Fiddler or something to inspect the packets that are going to the back. There's different ways that you can go about that. Pardon me? I still didn't hear that because I was walking on stage. Event viewer. Okay. Other data sources such as Oracle. I can honestly tell you that I do not know. Yeah, if you are using integrated Windows authentication, now if we had been in an environment where I had stored credentials in my connection file, this wouldn't be an issue. Because at that point, it can impersonate, it can take those stored credentials and log in with them. Okay, it's not really impersonation, it's logging in with those creds at that point. So if you can run an environment where you have stored credentials and you just lock down what reports people can go after, then it's not an issue. Not at least not going out to the data source. The scenario is you have a database that is locked down. For example, you have, let's say, all your reports are run through stored procedures, and people are granted the rights on stored procedures. It could block their access that way. Another scenario might be if your stored procedure or your report queries filter data based on who you are, that's another reason you want to pass the creds all the way back. If you have auditing requirements where you have to see who reads the data, and you end up logging that through a login trigger or something, or using our built-in auditing functionality, that is, you know, you need to have that, that username passed all the way back. And believe it or not, it is possible. I don't advise doing this, but you could have, you know, part of your stored procedure to return report data actually update a field, and then you could see who did the work. I don't advise that. I don't recommend that. It's not a good practice, but it is possible to do. If you had stored credentials in the data source, would you need Kerberos? You wouldn't necessarily need it to contact the data source, but you very well might and probably would need it for other things. There are other places where you will probably run into a need for Kerberos. Not necessarily. That actually takes me back to a question that was asked before that I almost missed. The question was, you know, do you have to configure this to use reporting services in SharePoint integrated mode? And the answer is no. You can still use a site in NTLM as long as you aren't hopping around and don't do anything that requires Kerberos. It can run in NTLM mode. The question that I almost missed was a difference for SQL 2012 with reporting services. And the difference is, with reporting services 2008 R2 and prior, the report server was an HTTP service. When you registered your SPNs for SQL Server reporting services in 2008 R2 and prior, you actually registered an HTTP SPN for the report server. Now that reporting services is a fully integrated shared service in SharePoint, you don't have to register an HTTP endpoint for it anymore. because it doesn't communicate that way anymore. It's now communicating internally with SharePoint. So I just needed the dummy SPN to do the delegation. I didn't actually have to create the HTTP SPN. That's the big difference for reporting services in 2012. Yes? There is an option in the reporting services config file, and I used any protocol, so it fell back to NTLM. But yes, there is in the reporting services config file an authentication option, and I think I have that in my script. There we go, yes. In the authentication types section, if you want it to use Kerberos, you need to add the RS Windows Negotiate in there. It's a standard XML file. Since I allowed it to use any protocol, if it can't do Kerberos, it's going to fall back to NTLM. And that is probably why it worked for us. Yes? Yes. Yeah, you have to use the stored creds if you're using NTLM. You aren't going to be able to pass that user account back to the back end. So it's really a decision on what is your business need. Do you have a business need for Kerberos and the tighter security, or is your business need to allow you to use NTLM? You know, if you have the business need to pass those creds all the way back, yes, you will have to configure Kerberos and do what we did here today. If you don't, NTLM is just fine for you, and you know, I know places that have done both. You know, some sites are NTLM, some sites are Kerberos. I haven't looked into the performance issues behind it personally. I'm going to refer you to the Active Directory folks for Kerberos versus NTLM performance. I've been more worried about the security aspect of it. You know, if you have the security need, chances are performance doesn't matter at that point. You know, it's going to be at that point. It's not going to, you know, add a huge amount of time, but if you have that security need, chances are that's what's going to have to happen. Okay. So I'm going to switch back to this PowerPoint machine. We still have time, so if you have more questions, feel free to ask. I just want to get through the rest of this deck. And then I'll keep going with the questions. Related content, there's other breakout sessions. Some of them have already happened, you can check out the recordings. Find me. I kind of float around downstairs at the TLC area. I'm all around. My email address is chuck.heinzelman. It was on the first slide. It's chuck.heinzelman@microsoft.com. We have a bunch of resources for the track, SQL Server and TechEd NA Twitter handles. There's certification labs going on downstairs, a bunch of good stuff happening there. All the TechNet, MSDN, Microsoft Learning, I know people that were taking certification exams like crazy today. And then the one last thing before people leave, I always forget to say this, don't forget to fill out your evals. Please, it's very important to us to judge our speaker quality and make sure they use them to determine who gets to speak next year as well. So I have another question here. And, you know, we've got another 10 minutes if you want to stay around and ask questions. That's what we're here for.
Regarding the SQL browser, when you have different instances.
Yes.
So what? How does the delegation need to be set up for that?
Delegation for SQL browser? Off the top of my head, I'm drawing a blank. Why don't you come up afterward, and I'll get your contact information. I will do a little bit of research. Normally, like with SQL Server itself, I like to recommend going directly after it, just because browser is a performance hit. It gives you a round trip. But with analysis services, that isn't an option. With SQL Server, it's not an issue, but yeah, with analysis services, it isn't an option. My gut is telling me that it would be the app that's making the call to analysis services is going to need to delegate to the browser service on that SPN, because I had to create the Disco SPN. And you have to delegate back to it for it to be able to query the browser service to figure out where to go. No, the browser service isn't going to make the connection for you. The browser service is going to tell you where to connect to. So that's why I'm saying it's a performance hit because you get a round trip. You have to find out from browser where you're going, and then you have to, just like with SQL Server, you find out from browser where you're going, and then you connect. But I still want you to come up afterwards. Give me your contact information. I will validate that for you. So don't take that as gospel. I could be wrong on that one, but I will find out. Yes? Okay, the question is, can you use SQL 2012 reporting services connected to a SQL 2008 R2 backend? And I have a clarification question on this. The clarification question is, are you talking about using 2008 R2 as content databases or using 2008 R2 as data source for reports? Okay. So the question is probably everything, and this was verified for me earlier this week by someone on the reporting services product team. The content databases for SQL 2008 or SQL Server 2012 reporting services in integrated mode can be stored in a 2008 R2 backend. They can be stored in a 2008 R2 backend, yes. And, however, and you can use 2008 R2 as a data source for your reports, or you can use 2012, or you can use 2005. As a data source for your reports. Any supported data source that you can do in a report in native mode, you're going to be able to run that report, you know, in integrated mode, because it's just the OADB or ODBC or whatever protocol connection at that point. But yes, the content databases, since it is now a shared service, the old config databases from native mode are now authentic SharePoint content databases. Those can be hosted on a 2008 R2 instance, just like the rest of the SharePoint content databases. Yes?
It looked like, though, from the previous reporting services that the BI analysis databases had to be 2012 to do the PowerView demonstrations they were showing. Is that right?
Well, PowerView, the data source for PowerView needs to be a 2012 tabular model. But the content that tabular model can source its data from anything that's supported.
So it just has to be there. Everything has to feed into that, though.
Yeah. So you build your tabular model, sourcing from whatever your data source happens to be, and then you run PowerView against that tabular model. Yes. The question is, does the version of Active Directory matter? And my honest answer is, I do not know. I'm going to refer you to the Active Directory folks on the TLC floor. I know there are things that change with the domain functional levels along the way. I'm running 2008 R2 domain functional level here. So I am running the latest, greatest released stuff. I don't know what the changes were and what the impacts may be along the way, but the Active Directory folks on the TLC floor would know that information or would be able to, again, find the right people for you. Any other questions? Thank you for being here. Enjoy the evening and enjoy the rest of TechEd.